I'm Mark Golub, and in the news, everywhere, is the name Judge Brett Kavanaugh, whose confirmation to the Supreme Court has been held up due to sexual allegations against him while he was in high school, in college, and even beyond. So much seems to be at stake for America in the allegations against Judge Kavanaugh. Should the charges be believed? Should the charges be believed even if there is no corroborating evidence or if there are no witnesses? What should America's position be when a woman comes forward with an accusation of sexual assault? Again, should she be presumed to be telling the truth under those circumstances? What does this issue suggest about America's system of justice, both in the courtroom and in the court of public opinion? Need any ordinary American citizen worry that if Judge Kavanaugh is deemed guilty without evidence or corroboration, the same thing could happen to any American? And is this entire mess simply all about politics? If everything were reversed, would the Republicans be demanding justice for Dr. Ford, while the Democrats would be arguing that this was merely an attempt to keep a liberal off the court? Well, for some unique and expert perspective, I'm so pleased to have back on our JBS phones Dr. Alan Dershowitz, who, as I'm sure you all know, is Professor Emeritus at Harvard Law School, is a lifelong liberal Democrat and a man who's devoted his entire adult life to the fight for civil liberties and justice. And Alan Dershowitz is author of two books most relevant to the current political climate. One is entitled The Case Against Impeaching Donald Trump, and Trumped Up: How Criminalization of Political Differences Endangers Democracy. Alan Dershowitz is also the author of a recent book entitled The Case Against BDS: Why Singling Out Israel for Boycott is Anti-Semitic and Anti-Peace. Alan, thank you so much for joining us once again.
I always look forward to being on your wonderful show and talking to your wonderful audience. I get great feedback.
Thank you. Alan, I am especially interested in hearing your assessment of this case, especially since, Alan, you were once charged with sexual misconduct. Although there was no evidence, you ultimately proved it was 100% false, and you were not only exonerated, lawyers actually made a public apology to you. I'm curious now how you evaluate and how you look at the charges that are being leveled against Judge Kavanaugh.
Well, my mind hasn't been changed by the false charges against me. They were done for money by, you know, lawyers who were looking for a payday, and by a woman who made up stories about virtually every American, from representatives to the UN, to kings, to presidents, to Israeli prime ministers. I was just in a long list of false accusations, and in my case, it was proved false. The former head of the FBI did a thorough investigation and came to an unequivocal conclusion that the charges were false, and the lawyers withdrew them. And, you know, I was unscathed, but, you know, obviously it was difficult when you're publicly on the front pages of newspapers all over the country, falsely accused of something you never did, never knew the woman, never met her, never heard of her. Totally false story, and the lawyer should have known better, but lawyers can be very irresponsible. In this case, there is two criteria. Number one, look, I'm a liberal Democrat. I would not have appointed Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. If it had been my choice, I would have appointed Merrick Garland the way Barack Obama did, and I think he was treated very unfairly. But there are really two criteria. One, is he qualified? Of course he's qualified. He's lived a life in the last 30 years of great distinction. He's been an excellent judge. I disagree with many of his opinions, but an excellent judge. He taught at Harvard Law School, where I met him just briefly on one or two occasions. I don't really know him except to say hello. He was highly regarded by the students. So he passes the criteria of qualification for the court. Now, along come these people, and they're alleging that notwithstanding the fact that he passed the criteria, he should be disqualified for what he did when he was in high school and in college. And I think the burden now shifts heavily to them. They have to demonstrate their case, and they have to demonstrate it quite convincingly. I wouldn't say beyond a reasonable doubt, but certainly by clear and substantial evidence. If there are doubts, they should be resolved in his favor, since he cleared the other burden of qualification. And I have an open mind. I want to hear both of them testify. I want to hear the cross-examination. I'm very happy that the cross-examination is going to be done by a professional female lawyer rather than by senators who often don't know how to ask a question or a follow-up question. Mm-hmm. I think it's more likely to produce the truth. By the way, it's not unprecedented. In the Oliver North case, my friend Arthur Lyman, who was an outside lawyer, conducted the interrogation. It's been done before, and it's a good idea. And I will withhold my judgment until I hear them both testify, particularly hear them both cross-examined, because, you know, the direct testimony is going to be canned and rehearsed. But cross-examination is one of the great engines for determining truth ever discovered by humankind. It comes from the Bible, from the book of Daniel, Apocrypha, where a man is accused by two women and a woman, I'm sorry, is accused by two old men, and Daniel cross-examines them each separately out of the hearing of each other and exposes their lies, and that has come to be called Daniel's rule. So cross-examination starts basically with biblical sources, and it's a powerful engine for determining truth.
Alan, there's been a lot of talk about the presumption of innocence in the American justice system, but many point out that when it comes to women being victims of sexual abuse, assault, the system has been unsympathetic and unresponsive, and the Me Too movement argues that in matters of sexual abuse against women, women should be presumed to be telling the truth, and that the accused man has the burden to prove the charges are false. How do you respond?
It shows the pendulum swings very, very sharply in different directions. For years, we had a disgraceful system where women were never believed, and the men were always believed. And now they want to overcome that by saying women should be believed and men should not be believed. That's not the right way to respond. There is no gender or sex-linked characteristic for lying or telling the truth. And every individual has to be judged on their own merits and demerits. And, you know, many, many women tell the truth. Many, many women lie. Many, many men tell the truth. Many lie. So every case has to be determined on its own merits. It's easy to do it in the legal system because we have rules. It's much harder to do it in front of Congress or in the court of public opinion. Look, Judge Kavanaugh went on Fox yesterday to try to make his case in the court of public opinion. How are we to assess it? I mean, he was not cross-examined. He was able to make his point. He was examined by a very good correspondent, but nonetheless, it's not the same as being cross-examined by somebody like me or somebody else who specializes in the ability to try to see the holes in people's testimony. So we'll wait. I think everybody should go to Thursday's hearings with an open mind. Nobody should presume that the accusers are telling the truth because they're women, or that the accused is telling the truth because he's a man. Those are both sexist and stereotypical, unfortunately, attributions, and they just don't, there's no scientific truth to back them up.
What about the issue of corroboration or witness testimony? If there is no corroboration of a woman's claim, would you ever want to say that the woman is telling the truth and the man is guilty?
Yes, yes. I don't think we need a corroboration requirement. We shouldn't have a requirement of corroboration just for sexual cases. We don't have it for murder. If a person is compelling and convincing, it's better if it's corroborated, and it's better if there's a videotape, obviously. But in life, that doesn't happen. Sometimes there's circumstantial evidence. For example, in the Kavanaugh case, there are entries in yearbooks that at least create some questions about what Kavanaugh was doing in high school, what he meant when he said or allowed to be written about him, some of the things that were written. He can be questioned about that. I think he should be. I'm not sure he was smart or right to volunteer that he was a virgin through high school and for years thereafter. That darn well better be true from his point of view. Because if you get one or two women coming forward and saying, no, he was my lover, we had a wonderful relationship in my first year of college.
Right.
That will, you know, show, raise questions about his credibility.
Yes.
So he better be certain.
Yes.
About his sexual status. And, you know, he was also a heavy drinker in high school and perhaps in college. And there are memory problems that are associated with heavy drinking. So I'm not sure I would have gone out on such a limb and disclosed. I mean, he would be the only justice in Supreme Court history that we know about his sex life. I mean, we knew a little bit about Justice Douglas's. And remember that the Republicans were trying to impeach Justice Douglas for his sex life when he was on the court. And that failed as well.
Do the charges alone, Alan, disqualify Brett Kavanaugh because there will forever now be a cloud over him in terms of sexual misconduct?
No, that would be a terrible, terrible thing. Obviously, Clarence Thomas, who I think was not qualified to be on the Supreme Court, has been serving on the Supreme Court. I wouldn't say with distinction, but he's been serving for the last many, many years. So, no, I think it would be very unfair to have a cloud determine your life. Your future has to be determined by hard evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I think the question for many people will be this. They're going to say, we're not sure about what he did in high school. We're not sure about what he did in his first year in college. We're just not sure. But is it enough, being 35 years old, to disqualify him after he led an exemplary life working for Catholic charities and doing, you know, great things and being something of a supporter of women with two little girls? And that's a moral question that I think a lot of people will have to face, and they're probably going to have to face it in light of uncertainties as to whether or not he did what he was charged with doing. Look, if it turns out that he did do what he was charged with doing, then he's disqualified not because of what he did, but because he lied about it now. Lying about it now under oath would disqualify him because he's not a child. So the issue is not so much what did he do when he was 17 or 18, but is he telling the truth now about what he did when he was 17 and 18?
Although, Alan, I think that even if he had told the truth, and the truth was, yes, I did in some way assault Dr. Ford when I was 17, he would never be confirmed.
Oh, I think that's right. I think if he assaulted her, that's right.
Okay. Alan,
you know, there was no, yeah.
Yeah. Do you believe, bottom line, this attack on Judge Kavanaugh is in fact nothing more than partisan politics, and that things would be reversed if Judge Kavanaugh were a liberal nominated by a Democratic president?
One of the books I plan to write in the future is called The Shoe on the Other Foot Test.
Yes.
I think almost all Americans fail that test.
Yes.
And I think most Americans fail it in the Kavanaugh case. I think if this were the opposite of Bill Clinton, obviously, who had his own problems sexually, if he had nominated somebody like, you know, with Kavanaugh's background, but who was an arch liberal, we'd be seeing the very same people who are now calling for him to be defeated, calling for the liberal to be elected, and the very same people who are calling for him to be put on the court would be taking the exact opposite position. Headline, there's hypocrisy in politics.
Yes.
It reminds me of, you know, Casablanca. Oh, my God, there's gambling in Casablanca. Who wouldn't know it?
Mm-hmm.
Hypocrisy in Congress? I can't believe it.
Alan, you always are honest with me. Have you taken enormous criticism for the fact that you are now often a guest on Fox?
Well, you know, I'm a guest a lot on CNN.
Yes.
I'm a guest on MSNBC.
Yes.
I've been a guest a lot on ABC and also on NBC.
Yes.
But I do get a lot of criticism for being on Fox. But I want to appeal to the widest possible audience. It's actually more important for me to be on Fox than for me to be on CNN, because on Fox, I have an opportunity to persuade Republicans and conservatives that civil liberties is something that helps them as well. So
yes,
I have a mission as a civil libertarian to try to show that civil liberties helps everybody. And I think having a Fox audience for that position is very important. Also, Fox generally tends to have a more pro-Israel audience. And I obviously want to talk about that issue whenever I have a chance to do it as well. But, you know, frankly, I'd rather be on CNN about Israel, because there I need to change the CNN audience somewhat.
Yes.
And I'd rather be on Fox about civil liberties. I always like to be on channels with audiences that have views different from my own.
I understand. By the way, we only have 20 seconds, Alan. How is the book being received on BDS?
Well, you know, there's so much else going on that I haven't had very much response on BDS. But if people want to read it, it's available, and it makes a very, very strong case against BDS. I'm trying to get it distributed on college and university campuses. If you know people who want to have it distributed on their campus, we can have a discounted price to have it available on college campuses all over the country. I think it would be useful to have it available on university campuses.
Absolutely. And again, you said at one point you and I will sit together and talk about the points you make in the case. Look, I keep telling you, you're doing fabulous work. I am so appreciative you make time.
Thank you.
Squeezing JBS in. You be
always,
well,
always
and I'll,
love
we'll
to be
talk
on
to you.
Your show. Good.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Sure. Be well.
Bye. Alan Dershowitz, author of The Case Against Impeaching Donald Trump and Trumped Up, How Criminalization of Political Differences Endangers Democracy. And again, Alan is also the author of a recent book entitled The Case Against BDS, Why Singling Out Israel for Boycott is Anti-Semitic and Anti-Peace. And AC says, there's so much going on at the moment, he hasn't really had a chance to promote that book. Hopefully we'll do so in the near future. This is the first time I've been able to be with you on it in the news since the holidays. So number one, I hope all of you had a most wonderful Rosh Hashanah, the entire 10 days right through Yom Kippur, Sukkot. We're about to celebrate Simchat Torah together. I hope this entire holiday season was wonderful for you and that the new year begins with one that brings you health, much sweetness, much joy, much opportunity to both spend time with the people you love and also to devote yourself to the dreams you have, the aspirations you have, that will in some way fulfill you, fulfill the innermost longings of your own soul. I have to tell you that the response that we received here at JBS from so many of you who responded to our saying, look, JBS is a nonprofit educational initiative. We need your financial support, just like PBS, to keep JBS on American television. To hear the kind of people you just heard as Alan Dershowitz addresses the Kavanaugh situation. And look, I am in some way biased. I think Dershowitz is fabulous, and I think so many things he says, not only about Israel, but American life and the issue of what does it mean to be a liberal and someone who believes in civil rights and human rights. I believe he is the most principled individual on the American scene today. When you see him on whether it's CNN or MSNBC or Fox or some of the networks, or you see him here on JBS. But you get to hear Alan Dershowitz talking about Brett Kavanaugh and whether he should or should not be confirmed and how we judge whether he should or should not be confirmed. You see that on JBS. And there's this galaxy of people who either are on L'chaim or whom we show you by taking you to events and addresses and symposiums and conferences on JBS you would never see elsewhere. We're the television home of the 92nd Street Y. We're the home of Jewish studies. We're soon going to be beginning once again from the Aleph Bet, our series where you can actually learn to read and understand Hebrew, not simply phonetically read Hebrew. We'll have Jewish 101, which explains from a non-Orthodox perspective, but from a traditional perspective, what's it mean to be a Jew, and what's the Jewish tradition all about? We have Mordechai Becher teaching Talmud every single week on American television, going into 47 million American homes. And we have Friday night services, as we've had high holiday services, Sukkot services. We'll have Simchat Torah services coming up. You can participate in Jewish life through JBS. And for people who are homebound for any reason whatsoever. They're ill. They're aged. It's hard for them to get around. Thanks to JBS, they have a way of participating in Jewish life. It's one of the things I am most proud of in JBS, and I'm so proud of JBS for a host of reasons. But one of the reasons that gives me most pride is that we are able to provide live services on Friday night and on Jewish holidays. And so we appeal to you for support. I mentioned to you that thanks to two families, we have matching gifts now for any of you who are going to be supporting JBS. Your contributions, tax deductible, will be worth double. And I want you to know how moved I've been over the last number of weeks. And for me personally, I lead services for my own chavurot up in Connecticut. I'm involved in high holiday services and then holiday services. So for me, so much of my energy on the high holidays is directed towards what it is to be a rabbi in an active congregation. Meanwhile, I'm receiving from you, the loveliest, most affirming, most encouraging, most grateful responses about how you feel about JBS. I can't thank you enough. And on one given day, we received tax-deductible donations, financial support from 17 different states throughout the United States. Not simply New York and New Jersey and Connecticut, but Arizona and California and Montana and Delaware and Pennsylvania, Florida. There are people now watching. 47 million homes were in. There are people now watching, learning, enjoying the information and education we give you here on JBS all over America. And to my joy, there are people out there telling me, continue the work you're doing. You and your entire staff. You're enriching Jewish life. You're creating a sense of community in areas of this country where there is no large Jewish community. And you're reminding us of what the state of Israel is, what the wonders of the Israeli people are, and why all of us, for all of Israel's problems, which are not as many as we have here in the United States, for all of Israel's problems, it is a miracle. It's a miracle because of who the Israeli people are and what they're doing day in and day out to help the entire world, to help humanity. That's one of the things we see all the time here on JBS. So I just want you to know how grateful I am to all of you who indicate what you feel about JBS, how you love JBS. And it's not simply, an email. It's also a check. And we've received checks for four figures and five figures. And I'm hoping there are still those of you out there who between now and the rest of the Jewish holidays, Simchat Torah coming, and then for the rest of the remainder of the year, you'll consider supporting JBS, keeping this unique Jewish educational initiative on American television. But I thank every single one of you, and I wish you the sweetest, happiest, healthiest of New Years. I thank Alan Dershowitz for his participation in this edition of In the News. I feel he says it so well. We'll all be watching what happens in the Kavanaugh hearings. And as he said, on the one hand, it's important to really believe, certainly take seriously any claim a woman makes about sexual assault. At the same time, as he said, not every woman tells the truth, not every man tells the truth. We really have to be honest and open to what happens now in the Kavanaugh hearings. We'll follow it here on JBS. And as always, my thanks to our director, Sloan Copeland. Beautiful job, Sloan. And to the producer of In the News, Carol Lilienthal. Until the next time, I'm Mark Golub. Be well, my friends.